From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. The presidential election was turned upside down when President Joe Biden announced Sunday he would not seek re-election. Dr. David Adler, president of the Altruis Institute and a constitutional scholar, will be holding another constitutional conversation next week, American Democracy in a Whirlwind, Biden, Harris, the Courts, and Presidential Character. Dr. Adler is joining us now to discuss Biden's withdrawal, the emergence of Vice President Harris as the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, and a host of other issues. Dr. Adler, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Jenna. Nice to be with you as always.
So, Dr. Adler, why do you say that American democracy is in a whirlwind? What are the extraordinary recent events that really have kind of thrown our democracy into this whirlwind?
Well, Gemma, it's quite a combination of events. We combine, first of all, the Supreme Court's recent decision in executive immunity, which essentially exalts the president above the law, renders him immune from criminal prosecution for the conduct of his official actions, and the recent decision in the federal district court in Pierce County, Florida, where the judge dismissed the indictment against Donald Trump in the classified documents case. You think about the implications of those two decisions and their grave threats to the very concept of executive accountability and the premise that the president is subject to the rule of law. You combine those with Project 2025, which would attempt to concentrate more fully than ever in our history, awesome powers in the executive. So giving the president the complete control over the Department of Justice, the military, the FBI, Homeland Security, and those two events alone raise the question of what the president may not do, what might be the curbs, if any, against presidential action. And then, of course, we've just seen, as you indicated, the historic announcement by President Joe Biden that he would be withdrawing from the 2024 presidential campaign, the first time in our history when a president has decided to forego an attempt at re-election after having won his party's nomination, and the emergence of Vice President Kamala Harris as the presumptive nominee, a Black American woman, an Indian American woman, who is a prosecutor and brings a new energy, a revival of enthusiasm in the Democratic Party, which surely rivals any candidate in recent history, going all the way back to John Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy and Barack Obama. And so there's a brand new dynamic introduced into this race. And of course, she's squaring off with a convicted felon, who is not a fan of democracy, not a fan of the rule of law, and who has said he would terminate provisions of the Constitution. You throw all of those factors into the winds, Gemma, and indeed we have quite a chaotic picture in 90 days ahead of us before the November election.
In your opinion, what is the historical significance of President Biden's withdrawal from the presidential race?
I think it was a decision that reflects the best side of his character. The example of a national leader who is a happy political warrior. Every bit of him would like to run for a second term and square off against Donald Trump. But who came to the decision, probably somewhat reluctantly, after hearing many voices of influence around him, that convinced him that the chances of losing our democracy in the event of a Trump victory in the fall were so overwhelming that he decided that it was best for the country if he stepped aside. A clear example of a president, as he said, one who reveres the office but loves his country and democracy more. And so I place that decision, Gemma, in the historic context of a George Washington who, after the Revolutionary War, might have held on to the reins of power. He was a conquering hero. Mm-hmm. Bill by everybody as a great patriot, but he laid down his arms, so to speak, imitating Cincinnatus, the Roman statesman. And he might have gone on to serve a third term in the presidency, but everyone remembers that he stated that an elective monarchy is not why we fought the revolution. So he deigned to cast aside all the trappings of power, all the perks and privileges that come from serving in the nation's highest office. We saw Lyndon Johnson making that very humble decision in the spring of 1968 not to pursue yet another term. So there are leaders here in our country's history and throughout the world who have made those very difficult decisions. And as you know, the framers of the Constitution, who understood very well the very concept that political leaders are ambitious souls. The more power they have, James Madison wrote, the more they want. And power is a heady brew, and it's not easy to set aside all the trappings of power in the name of the national interest, the national good, your own personal ambition. And so I think in this case, Joe Biden did choose country over ambition, personal ambition. And that's a sign of presidential character, which is a very, very important aspect of the American presidency.
And Dr. Adler, I mean, the president during his address to the nation last night said, and I'm quoting here, quote, "Americans are going to have to choose between moving forward or backward, between hope and hate, between unity and division. We have to decide, do we still believe in honesty, decency, respect, freedom, justice, and democracy," end quote. And he also said that our democracy is more important than any title. What were your thoughts as you were listening to that? And you heard him say, you know, put country first, put our democracy first, outside of any, you know, title. And frankly, giving up power, the greatest power that any person could have in this country.
Well, that's quite right, Gemma. That's an important question. I was moved by those sentences in his historic speech because he was ringing the changes on those in our founding generation who themselves made great sacrifices in the name of the embryonic republic that they were creating. And he invoked the likes of Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, two of his favorites, of course. If we were to go all the way back to the Declaration of Independence and its signing, we well remember that Benjamin Franklin spoke for all of his fellow delegates in the Continental Congress when he said that that if we don't win this fight, we'll all hang together. So it's not merely, in that case, giving up any power that they hope to acquire, but it's giving up their lives. And so there's a great tradition in democracy of setting aside personal ambition in favor of the idea of America, which Biden again last night spoke so eloquently about. The idea of America, as he said, is the premise that in our country, the people rule. What a concept at the outset of the founding of the United States, the very idea that people would enjoy their sovereignty, popular sovereignty, reigns supreme, displacing, Gemma, all previous conceptions about the location of sovereignty, whether in a king, a queen, a tyrant, or in Parliament in England. And so the idea of America was the idea that the American people would govern themselves, and toward that end, they would write a constitution which we the people would ratify. And in the preamble of the Constitution, you know, we said we create this government. This is ordained and established by the American people. A president committed to the premise and promise of the Declaration of Independence and reaffirmed by that wonderful sentence in the preamble of the Constitution is a president who's very much marching in rhythm with the founding generation. And Biden, despite his shortcomings, nevertheless has always been well fitted into that understanding of what America is. And as you know, he's very fond of saying in 2020 that when he ran for the presidency, he thought that he was fighting for the soul of America, That's what he means when he talks about the critical need for America to defend its democracy and why it's incumbent on every American person, every American voter, to work hard to preserve democracy, invoking Benjamin Franklin's famous answer to a woman on the street outside Independence Hall after the Constitutional Convention had adjourned on September 17, 1787, in reply to the question, "What kind of a government have you given us? A monarchy or a republic?" He responded, "A republic, madam, if you can keep it." That's no cliche in our democracy, Gemma. That is a vital premise, the cornerstone of the preservation and the future of American democracy. And it's clear, as Biden said last night from the Oval Office, seated at the Resolute desk, surrounded by friends and family and key advisors in that historic setting, that he had taken that to heart. And he now is urging his fellow Americans to pick up the cudgels, understand what is at stake, and to pursue the assurance that democratic principles and values would prevail. And as I thought about that, and I appreciate your question, it occurred to me at this critical moment in American history, Gemma, that we Americans could in fact make the choice of voting ourselves out of democracy into an authoritarian regime. But once living under an authoritarian regime, we're not going to have the chance to vote ourselves back into a democracy. And I wish that every American would think about that very, very carefully. It's one thing to say we have complete choice and the freedom to vote as we would like is a beautiful thing. Not many on our planet have that right. But we should exercise it wisely, because it's a gift. And it's not only a gift to us at this point to make decisions to govern our lives, but we're looking at posterity. The decisions we make now will affect people for decades and decades to come.
Dr. Adler, I want to talk a little bit about presidential character and its importance to the office of the presidency. What should listeners, in your opinion, know about this subject and why you believe it's important, really, to our nation as a whole?
Thank you. I think that's an important question, Gemma. The reality is, as we know, that character involves how we think and feel about things, how we conduct ourselves. And at rock bottom, the American presidency is an office that has been created by the Constitution, is bound by the Constitution, enjoys only those powers granted to the office by the Constitution. And so in many ways, the framers understood that the potential of any presidency is really going to hinge on the character of the presidency. After all things are said and done, checks and balances are involved to curb the temptation, perhaps by presidents who might in their day have imitated European tyrants in aggrandizing power, and the office is sufficiently empowered to carry out the duties and responsibilities of the office, what an American president does with that office is really going to reflect that person's character. And so George Washington was a fine role model, and we've had many great presidents throughout our history who have wanted to use the power of the office to do good things. President Lyndon Johnson certainly comes to mind among many. In 1964, he decided that he wanted to champion the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to ensure that Black Americans, historically denied their constitutional rights, would in fact be placed on par with white Americans. He knew the great cost to his party and perhaps to himself if he did that, because he would alienate the Democratic South, a solid South that had helped Democrats for many, many years. And he did it despite the risk to his party and to himself. And at the end of the day, when he was asked about the fact that he would risk the power of the Democratic Party, he responded, quote, "Well, what the hell is the presidency for?" He was invoking the moral force of the office, which often, Gemma, can be more important than the political force, the political power of the office, because the president has become the head of the nation, the leader of the nation, precisely because the president enjoys an unrivaled platform to bend the ear of the American people. A president intent on doing good things for the nation has an opportunity, a historic opportunity, to redefine, recreate the nation, and to make the nation a more perfect union. On the other hand, Gemma, there can be people who fill the office of the presidency who are malcontents, whose character does not suggest the crucial necessity in a republic of respecting the Constitution and the rule of law, of defending and promoting democratic values and principles. That kind of president that the framers feared, frankly, could emerge if that sort of a president could mow down checks and balances, circumvent all the other restraints imposed by our Constitution, convince people to engage in unconstitutional or illegal acts, and that person would thus represent a profound threat, maybe an existential threat, to American constitutional democracy. So character is so important to the future of our country, and as voters, we should very much take account of the character of the candidate seeking the office, because at the end of the day, what may count more than anything else is exactly what that president would like to do with the awesome power of the presidency. That's the question.
How has the 2024 presidential race changed, if at all, by the presumptive nomination of Vice President Kamala Harris to the Democratic Party's top ticket? And I ask this question because there seems to be a different force almost. It feels like when I was, first in college and Bill Clinton was running, and then again when Barack Obama was running, there is an energy that has been lacking for quite some time.
I think you're exactly right, Gemma, and I agree with you completely. The emergence of Kamala Harris as the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party, and I'm sure she'll be duly confirmed by the convention in a couple of weeks in accordance with the process and all the rules, marks the elevation of enthusiasm and energy, the likes of which we have not seen for a very, very long time. I believe, Gemma, that Kamala Harris brings Camelot qualities to this race, and we may be cueing the music, and we may be saying Camelot instead of Camelot, because I think Americans are so eager for a different choice in the 2024 presidency. As much as some love Joe Biden, or as much as some were so enthusiastic about Donald Trump, this race has been profoundly changed. It interjects some fascinating factors, Gemma, first of which is we now have a prosecutor running against a felon. We also have a much younger candidate running against a much older candidate. And in the same way that people were questioning the age and the ability and the memory of Joe Biden, all those questions now are going to be shifted to Donald Trump. People now will be wondering about his failing memory, his tendency on occasion to ramble incoherently, his own health prospects. We know that he's been dealing with heart disease and obesity for a long time. I think the demands for some of his medical records and new tests will be forthcoming, and they'll haunt him on the campaign trail. We also, of course, understand this is a historic choice because we have a Black American woman, an Indian American woman against a white man, and his advocacy of misogyny and sexism and racism. And this is going to be a very nasty campaign in these next 100 days, Gemma. And I think that the decision made by Kamala Harris to become a candidate caught the campaign, the Donald Trump, J.D. Vance campaign, flat-footed, and because they had built a race predicated on the idea of running against Joe Biden, that has completely changed. And we don't know yet whom Vice President Kamala Harris will choose as her running mate. She has an opportunity to make an even more historic decision. She may well choose Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, and two women in the race, which has many strategic advantages, one of which is it would nail down Michigan, one of those crucial swing states, in an election where five or six or seven swing states are going to be the final determining factor, and the power of two women on the campaign trail promoting one of the key issues among Democrats, and that is women's health and particularly women's reproductive rights, against a ticket that has essentially denied rights to abortion, no exceptions, and denigrated women, and particularly women of color. So the dynamic factors in this race have changed everything so profoundly. It's going to be a fascinating race the rest of the way. And I think in answer to your question, Gemma, I think you're right. There's a brand new energy because Americans now have the kind of choice that they have wanted. Instead of a Biden-Trump race between two octogenarians, they now have a much younger, energetic woman who can change America's political landscape, perhaps in the most dramatic way possible.
Dr. Adler, I only have 1 minute left with you, but I would quickly love your thoughts on this. Before Biden gave his speech last night, Trump's attorney came out saying they want equal airtime because this is, quote, a campaign speech. Your thoughts on that? And I have 1 minute.
You know, I don't think of it as a campaign speech at all. I think there were two references to Vice President Harris, crediting her for being a partner in the big decisions that the Biden administration had made and sharing the credit for their major accomplishments. I view this as a peremptory attack by Trump on the networks. He's already trying to discredit the networks, as we've seen in his shifting attitude toward having ABC as the moderator for the what would have been the prospective Biden-Trump debate in September. He does not want to debate Kamala Harris before the ABC moderators. He wants to shift to Fox News, which is not a news
And Dr.
outlet.
Adler, I have to let you go. We are out of time. Sorry to interrupt you. Dr. Adler, of course, will be having his constitutional conversation Thursday, August 1st at the Yonkey Center in Boise. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.